Herman Krebers, you've recently retired from teaching at the Amsterdam Conservatory, but that doesn't mean you've stopped playing completely, does it? You've stopped teaching completely.
Oh, no.
I'm in your house in Tilburg in the south of the Netherlands, and there's a Hungarian violinist waiting in the wings, so you're carrying on.
Yes, I go on. I decided to stop in Amsterdam after 46 years. That's a long, long time. And not only for myself, but also for the pupils, because now if I stay, then that's the rule in the conservatory, you have to accept the pupils for 4 years. And that's too risky. That I don't want to die in my room in Amsterdam. And that was the reason. I had an unbelievable evening. They gave me a party and master class that will be on the television tomorrow. That's unbelievable. It was for me unforgettable evening.
But you're still having students now coming to you. How many students do you have?
That's very difficult to say. For example, next week before I leaving for Poland, I have about 5-6 in a day. And then I teach all day here because that's a privilege that I can teach, because we are living in an apartment and then you have to be very careful for the neighbors, but everybody likes it, I hope. And I feel very quiet and I don't have to travel, you know what it is, between Tilburg and Amsterdam. But we are very happy to live here. Normally we lived in the center of Holland, near Haarlem. And that was more, that easier for me to travel to Amsterdam. But still, the pupils are coming special for different reasons. There are coming pupils to make an audition. For example, there are many auditions now in the Concertgebouw Orchestra, in the radio orchestra for leader. And all the young people, they want to make that audition. And in case I have a little bit experience to play in an orchestra, I was 19 years leader in Amsterdam, you know that. And that's the reason they want to study the orchestra part, and also in the beginning of the audition they have to play the Mozart concerto or a romantic concerto. And there are pupils, they have a concert. There are pupils, they have chamber music. There are pupils, they have a trio, and so every day is different. And also Monday and Tuesday, they're coming for Japan for only 2 days. There's a girl, she's coming for 2 days, and she has many lessons as possible. And then she fly back Wednesday.
So you've got pupils coming from all over the world to
all
see you.
All over the world, yes. That's very strange. I was not a real, world star like Itzhak Perlman or Zuckerman or the great, great, great. But I don't complain. I had many recordings. I was many years leader, but very, very strange. Now I'm teaching, only teaching. My name is much more all over the world. That's very strange. I don't know why.
Well, there are very few. I mean, there are great violinists, yes,
that's right.
But very few great violinists can be great teachers as well. But I know that your name is considered as one of the great teachers in the world.
Yeah, I hope. But you are right. There are not so many teachers. And in a way, you have to be born as a teacher. You have to have the feeling. I had it already when I was 17. I liked very much to give my experience on the stage. You know, the great violinist Thibaut, he said, in the bathroom, my tone is unbelievable, but you have to have that same tone on the stage, and that's different, you know.
But you're also considered to be the greatest 20th century Dutch violinist. I mean, you know, this. You don't want to be.
We have more. We have more. My great friend Theo Olof, he's a great, great violinist, and we spent together also as duo 67 years. Unbelievable.
You say that with your pupils, that you're quite hard with them, that you're not too tolerant with them. Is that true?
Yes. I'm honest to my pupils, and if they want to study with me, they have to do not only the way I want that they, how they have to study, because that's a secret to prepare something. Because it can happen that if something happened to me, they have to go on. And my idea is to give lessons every day, like I'm not there tomorrow, that they have something in their mind, they have something in their experience working with me, that they know how to study. That is the base of every instrumentalist, not only for the, but special for the violin. And our battle is the fight to the intonation. And I was thinking a lot, and I learned a lot on the stage, a lot. And that's unbelievable feeling that you can see, even if you are very, how you call it in English, very hard to the young people, but they accept it because they know I'm honest, and always they can accept what I want, especially in big repertoire.
But you really, you have to be hard to them, don't you? Because it's such a hard discipline anyway to play the violin. You've got to be utterly dedicated and disciplined.
It's an unbelievable job. Very, very difficult to make a career, even as a soloist, but even as a teacher or even orchestra violin. Because if you want to make an audition in the Concertgebouw, for example, everybody wants to come in the Concertgebouw because it's one of the best. But also I have pupils, I told yesterday that I have pupil, he is now leader in the Scala by Muti. There is one boy, 23 years, he is leader in Mazel, with Mazel in München. But that job is even more difficult than a soloist, because you need to be a personality to work with the orchestra. The, how you call it, the uitstraling, the presence of your personality. And then you have to know the orchestra repertoire, but still you have to know the solo repertoire, because you have, sometimes you have to play as a soloist. And that's a very, very, very difficult job.
Because, let's say, violinists that work at, that go and study at a conservatory, for example, the Amsterdam Conservatory, probably 95% of those people will find it very difficult to get a job. There are so few jobs going and so much competition. It is a difficult life, isn't
You're
it?
Right. You're right. And to be honest, I'm worried. I'm worried about the future of many young people. And I tell you why. The problem, and that was the same with my professor, I never have problems with the pupils, but I have problems with the parents. And the parents, they are saying, when they play, very simple something, they think they are minuet, you know, they think they are high fets. And that's the problem. And then you have to be very hard to the parents, much harder than to the young people. And that is my job. And I must say, I have a few soloists in the world, like Frank-Peter Zimmermann. He was my pupil for many, many, many years, and still he is coming and he's phoning and unbelievable. But he makes a world career, unbelievable. He plays where he wants to go, but not many. And then for me, the satisfaction that if I can give the pupil the possibility that he get a good job in an orchestra, because don't forget, for one job, one place in the Concertgebouw, over 200 candidates, you know that. Because we are a little country.
Well, you've concentrated on teaching for the past 20 years, just teaching. But that was forced upon you, wasn't it? You had to give up playing because of something that all musicians dread, an accident to your right arm.
The second of August. What happened? 1979. We had a yacht, and we were sailing, motor yacht, but also, I don't know the expression in English, motor sail, sailing yacht. And we went on the IJsselmeer, that's not a big, but in Holland, and for 4 days, because I should go to Australia for a long tour, and we went with the children, with our daughter and her husband, and the grandchild, and my wife and me. And then it was unbelievable weather, stormy, and we came in the harbor in near Amsterdam in Durgedam. And my daughter said, "Papa, don't touch with your hand." They know it already. I don't touch anything with my hands. I'm not careful, but I don't want to force. And she said, "Don't touch, but go on the other boat and keep with your feet a little bit elbow, because it is unbelievable." And from this moment, I cannot tell you what happened. I felt between the two boats, and I jumped under the boat. And I thought, well, that's it. And on the last moment, what I telling you, they told me, because I was complete out of. And then my son-in-law and my wife, they took me on one arm up. But we should go in the restaurant in the evening, and I had already clothes on and a raincoat, and you know what it is if you go in the water, that the weight is double. And that was the reason that that was not broken, that if it is broken, my shoulder, that's not so serious. But it was hurt in all with the muscles, you know. And then I was screaming like unbelievable. I cannot express how painful it was. And then they took me in the hospital. And then they gave me a lot of injections. And then I felt marvelous, but it was like drugs, you know. And then the doctor says, I said to him, I have to play the Paganini Concerto in Rotterdam Thursday, and Friday I have to go to Australia. And he knows me, he knew me, my name, and he said, come tomorrow in my office. And then he said, I have to tell you, I have to be honest, you never can play any, never.
And how did you feel? What was your initial reaction to it?
Very strange. I could accept, I don't know why. And I have to be the reality that after that, and it took me 6 years. After 5 years, I started with a pillow on the floor, and then also teaching. I went on teaching in Düsseldorf in Germany and in Amsterdam, not playing, but teaching. I learned a lot to teach. Without violin, you can learn a lot. But I was not happy, because I used to play, you know, and I play for the pupils, how it looks, how it sounds. But I learned still. And I must say, honestly, that this 5, 6 years, 5.5 years, that's the most beautiful time in my life. Because I was working, I was leader in Amsterdam, I was teaching in Düsseldorf and in Amsterdam. I had the Guarneri Trio also for 20 years with two French musicians. And I was soloist. Can you imagine that I was working crazy, crazy? And now...
You could just concentrate on the one thing.
Yeah, not only that. I had a feeling I don't go to the church. But in that moment, I had a feeling there was something that they took my shoulder and they said, and now you have to keep your mouth and now you have to be quiet. You know, that feeling I had. But in the same moment that it starts, the therapy was unbelievable. every morning in the hospital. You don't believe that, but finished. But it is unbelievable that I started to work, to concentrate on my concert, what I did, and every concert I made new fingerings, new bowings, new ideas, everything I could take a lot of time for it. And that's an unbelievable feeling. Because I every evening I was on the stage, in which situation, or teaching, or praying, or everything. And now I could concentrate on one thing, what you said. Well, and everybody, there were many, many people, it's unbelievable, the letters from all over the world. But there were many people, they were so afraid to call me. They said he was suicide, you know, and he will cry. But I was very, very happy.
Because it's something that I think most violinists, great violinists, wouldn't be able to understand, because they would think if they can't do the thing that they've been doing all their lives, suddenly it stopped.
Yeah,
then,
that's right.
What's the point
that's,
of things?
That's right. But for me, but don't forget, after the 5 years, then I told you that with the pillow on the floor and the bone, I try and... because I couldn't move for 4 years my arm. And only in the water I was very happy. But then normally I couldn't move. And then I started, and it is unbelievable that the pupils, they know it. In that time, my pupils. And I started to play. I started to play and try and every day again, because I wanted to play. And the doctor said, you never can play. In a way, he was right, because if I didn't start and try, you know, but I did. And it is unbelievable now, in my right arm, where the accident was, and if I am traveling, or I have a suitcase, and it is very heavy, I take it with this arm, and this arm is much stronger, and I can play 8 hours, I don't feel anything.
Well, you mentioned that you've described yourself in the past as a chameleon, because you did all these different things, the soloist, the leader of the Concertgebouw Orchestra, a trio, and teaching. But why did you decide to play in an orchestra rather than just concentrate on your solo career?
That's a very good question. You have very good questions. No, I mean it. And I tell you why. I could live very, very good as a soloist. But don't forget, every soloist, even the greatest, they have a tremendous competition. You said already in the beginning of this interview, there is a tremendous competition. And I'm a real Dutch. That means safe, you know, because I wanted to marry very young, and we wanted to have children very young, and that I felt the responsibility. And even the greatest violinist, or artist, pianist, cellist, you have to wait every year in September what's going on. You need a very good manager, you know, and then still, even if the manager good, you never know what's coming. And sometimes you have a lot of concerts, sometimes you don't have. It is always no regulations. You have to wait. You have to be grateful. You know, you have to make a little bit to the conductors. Even if the conductor is spoiling your concert, you have to say, oh, thank you very much, you are a marvelous conductor. That's all theater, you know, all not honest. And that was the reason I had a marvelous situation, because I worked in that unusual. We started, Olaf and I, we started with that idea in 1950. And after that, many, many, many orchestras took it, the same idea, that means two leaders. And with the same situation, the same ideas, not the same ideas, but I mean that we could change the concert, we could arrange the concert only for 6 months. And that was a marvelous idea, because then we could have our own work, but still the responsibility is still hard working in orchestra, but they paid well, and that was the reason. Because still I could live. Many years after that, I had many, many concerts, and still I didn't want to give up. But now I'm so happy that I was in the orchestra, because my teaching now is concentrate on all the people what I said before, that I can give them a future. And there are many great soloists, they don't know anything about orchestra playing. Even if they play their own concert with orchestra, sometimes you can feel that they don't know what's going on. They are real soloists. I'm the boss. But you have to play with the orchestra. You have to play with the conductor. You have to look at the conductor, you know? And that's a marvelous feeling, that you know what's going on. What's going on in the orchestra. The experience, not only in a great solo like Scheherazade, like Heldenleben by Strauss, unbelievable difficult solo. And I did. I made all the recordings with Haitink. And that gives me an unbelievable experience. Unbelievable.
Well, I believe there was an occasion when you were playing with the Concertgebouw Orchestra, I think Beethoven's Mass in C, when Leonard Bernstein was conducting.
You know everything about me.
and something quite wonderful happened there, didn't it, when you were playing the Benedictus? Or reading lots of things.
I must say, Lenny was, we say Lenny and not Leonard, Lenny was for me an unbelievable man. From the first moment he came in Amsterdam, that we were very, very good friends and we had a very good contact. And then we played the Beethoven with the great Benedictus solo. And in the evening I played that solo with choir, and very difficult solo. Very, very difficult. And I did it on the TV also with him. And I made the recording with Jochum. But what happened after the solo, it finished with a long, 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 long note. All along, very high. That's not easy. You feel 38 eyes in your back, you know. But what happened if you get a track in your... very long note, and it nothing. And then he was like he praying, and he didn't move. And I said to my colleague, what's wrong with him? He's ill. And then after a few minutes, nothing, and the public was like that, and he stepped from his little platform, he stepped, and he took me by my jacket, he took me. And he kissed me. Unbelievable. And I never forget that moment. And then he stepped on, and then went on.
And then you started playing again.
Unbelievable.
Wonderful experience.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at the age of 17, you became the leader of the Arnhem Orchestra.
That's right.
Am I right in saying that you were the youngest leader ever of an orchestra here?
I don't mind if colleagues or friends or artists, they say what they did. I don't mind. But I must say I have a great, great, great respect, and we are very good friends, Jaap van Zweden. You know him. He was a marvelous violinist, but now he's conducting, and he's a very, very good conducting, an unbelievable artist. And he said, when he came after me, he went in the Concertgebouw. And then he said in every paper, I'm the youngest. I'm very sorry, he was not the youngest. I was 2 years. But I must say, he was leader 19 years in the Concertgebouw. But still, in my time, 17 years. And I never forget that the second leader was a man from 57. And I had to tell him what I want. That's not easy. And there, on that place, in that situation, I didn't have a contract for 6 months. I had to work all year. I had to play opera, everything, every solo, and also many soli as a soloist. But I must say that was the best experience for my career. 17 till 3 years, till I was 20.
But you were 17 then, but you'd already been playing the violin for 12 years. You started when you were 5, I think. You gave your first solo performance when you were 9. You were known as something of a wunderkind. But you say that your childhood wasn't a happy one.
No. I had marvelous parents. We lived in a little village, in that time little village, now in Ede, near Arnhem. But my father, we had not, in the financial situation, was very, very bad. And there were many people. I was happy that they wanted to help me. But you know that feeling, if you don't feel your freedom, if some people, they help you, but they let you know that they help you. You know that feeling, you know what I mean. And my parents, unbelievable, they died very young, both. And they had no idea from my problem because I didn't want to complain. I was very young. I went to Amsterdam.
And you lived alone there in a boarding house in Amsterdam as a child?
Yeah. First of all, I was in the home of the director. That was terrible, terrible. Like in prison. And then I went in at home with a Jewish lady. She was a widow. And in the education, I must say now that I could kill her every day. But now I am very grateful. You know what she learned?
What did she do to you?
For example, if you have... she allowed me few minutes to get the paper, and then I was looking in the paper, and then she said, I need the paper back like you have found the paper, you know, that, like you, with an iron, you know. Then if we have potatoes, you cannot take the sauce from the top, you have to go in. All this thing. Then she was playing bridge, and then I have to come in, and then I had to take my suit, and I had to come in to greeting all the ladies, and then I had to stand, and then you don't believe that. The most I can say that now for this interview, that if I went to the toilet, she said, you have to take first the water because I don't want to hear you pee-pee. And that education...
it was more so the her etiquette of life, was it?
That's right. That's right. But was not easy for me. I remember, I don't want to make a drama, but I was crying a lot. But, okay, it happens. And now I'm grateful. And I have to be careful that I don't have the same discipline to my pupils because they live more. But still, there is something. If they come in and they put the clothes on the floor and I have a marvelous standard for the clothes, then I looked in and said, put it on. That I kept from the early time.
But your father was, you say you loved your father, he was marvelous, but he was also a very strict man.
Yes.
With you, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a personality. He worked many nights. He worked normally in a factory, in a well-known factory in Arnhem, in Ede, and silk industry, Kunstzijde. And... Then in the night, he played the saxophone, and then we went by bicycle with his saxophone and to make money. And then middle in the night, he came back, and we didn't have a bell at the door or nothing. And then he was whistling the Tirium, pum pum Tirium, pum, the overture at Sampa by Herod for my mother. And then she went down and she opened, and I was always awake from. That's unbelievable, this story, but it never goes out of my mind, never.
Okay, we've got that. So in Amsterdam, as a child, you were there on your own, lonely, but you must have had a great desire, a need to play the violin, did
no.
you?
No. No? I felt that I had to do that because I know that my parent, my dear mother, she didn't know anything about music, and I knew that my father, he wants it. And I felt I had to do that. I felt that I was under pressure, not only from my father, but also from my teacher, Oscar Bach, and also studying at the conservatory under pressure from my director. I was always under pressure. The only moments that we had a little bit freedom, that was with Olaf, because Theo Olaf...
That's Theo Olaf, your...
Friend. He's still my friend after unbelievable long years. And then if we met each other in that time, we had a little bit fun, and he was also not so happy. And then we had an enormous help from each other. But I had not a desire. I had the responsibility, I felt, and that I have always, like my work for the pupils, my work to my family, I feel always responsibility, but not a desire. That's another word. The desire came, and what I...